so why you twerk? Go ahead and start and make the pussy fart and whistle while you twerk.
Twerk some.
Yin yang in his veins. 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 Yin yang in his veins.
Let me see you make the pussy fart. Good lord, make it shake like a salt shaker. Too hard, get it up till you can't. No more, see I love it when your hoes take it to the phone, baby, bounce, big and bounce, huh. It's on you, shawty, you can twerk in your skirt if you want to. See, we can't keep it close for ya all night. For the dub in the club, show me what I like.
Free bitch, make money in the club. Some hoes like to take it off for a
toe. Welcome back to the Blackest Break with yours truly, Casey Lehman. We have a panel of heavyweights that can't stop whistling while they're twerking tonight. Tonight's guests are John Wood, Toria Williams, Sean
Hill. Not a mountain, but a hill.
Right. Thank you. And Malcolm Darrell, who is probably going to steal podcasts from the couch while he's taking his power nap. And tonight's topic is, it's really not Miley Cyrus, but we have to say she's inspired this conversation, but just the commodification of blackness for monetary gain by the other or other races. And of course, this is in relation to Miley's recent performance on the VMAs and her song. I don't know what it's about, but her twerking and her black women sidekicks are back up in regards to the twerking dance and her not really having enough junk in the trunk to twerk and just kind of looking crazy. And the girl who recently set herself on fire trying to twerk for her man, make a twerking, like twerking. I don't know what it is right now. It's going crazy.
And it ain't new.
It's not.
It ain't new. We were just sitting here singing Yin Yang Twins. Whistle while you twerk.
But all of a sudden, I guess, I mean, it's new to Miley.
It's Miley. Apparently. She's got a new following. And so they're like, let's twerk.
Yeah.
I even heard it made it into the dictionary, like the slang dictionary or something.
Oh, yeah. Twerk now has its an official definition. And the question is, okay, is this a race issue? Is Miley Cyrus twerking in public a race issue?
Well,
is she appropriating black culture?
What it demonstrates, this is John Wood, what it demonstrates is something that it's a reincarnation of something that's been true for a long time. And that is the fact that, you know, some white people, this goes back to Elvis and before, and it's not necessarily a bad thing in and of itself, but you know, some white people have always sort of taken the opportunity to, when wanting to rebel against the mainstream of their culture, appropriate and adopt things that are going on in our culture, which would otherwise be taboo in white culture, and emulate it themselves. And so, you know, that's been part, you know, that leads to the commodification of, you know, things coming from our culture. And that's been part of the crossover effect of black culture and entertainment into white culture that has led to our very, very integrated entertainment culture. And again, I don't say that like it's necessarily a bad thing in all instances. The problem for me is when white people take things from black culture that the mainstream of black culture doesn't even really want to be associated with and winds up spreading it out there in such a way as to where that, you know, ratchet element of what it is we're talking about winds up to most people being indicative of what it is to be black. And I'm sure that Miley Cyrus did not have, you know, an agenda like that when she did this. I'm sure Miley genuinely thinks
she's
it's
not
cool.
That smart.
But on the other hand, yeah, Miley's frankly, and I say this person who used to like Miley Cyrus and, you know,
or Hannah Montana.
Montana, Miley, you know, yeah. I mean, I used to think that, you know, she's a good role model for kids. And now Miley's completely fallen off of me. I'm sorry. Even after Hannah Montana with a little, you know, party in the USA or whatever.
She turned 19 though. So
now it's just like, it's not even sexy. I'm sorry.
You gotta have ass
like
to twerk.
An 11-year-old boy twerking on Robin Thicke in a Foot Locker uniform. It's just weird. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But, you know, and so yeah, that's my take on it. And it's one of the dangers of having, you know, things going on in our culture as African Americans that may not portray the heights of the values that we want to portray, because not only is it something that, you know, we might find has a problematic influence in our own community, but it's something that people from outside of our communities will take and put on a megaphone for everybody else to consume and to define us by. So for us, it's problematic on a number of levels.
And it kind of just reminds me of like the Harlem Shake craze when they came out with the newer Harlem Shake, emulating what we had already mastered. Right.
Victoria, man.
You know we disagree on that one. It's not the same.
Right. And then here they come. But to me it is, because they all do that. I am not surprised that Miley Cyrus got her little 19-year-old butt up there and started emulating or having the black women twerk like Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
Come on. Like, I'm not shocked. J-Lo, I'm not shocked. Britney, I'm not shocked. They want their hips. They want our hips. They want our ass. They want our dance moves. Not all of them, but that they don't want. They don't want our debt. But when it comes to entertainment and it comes to being cool and having swag, you know, because even in her video for that song, she's got a grill in her mouth and she's got a beanie on and she's like, you know, repping, throwing it up. I just laugh, you know, because first off, you're not talented enough for me to take you seriously, right? That's not talent. Somebody was smart enough to kind of coax you to be the little Nickelodeon girl for everybody to love, but there's no talent there. So when there's no talent, you resort to putting on the little boy shorts with your little boy body and twerking, right? And we're giving her that attention.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate because people that are in music who are talented will never get this much spotlight because they're not on stage making a fool of themselves.
Right.
And she clearly was making a fool of herself. But this is, like you said, her publicist said, and I've read a couple of articles, this was the best thing she could have done. And I'm like, really? All this ass I got, and ain't nobody putting a spotlight on me if I twerk. I might get a drink in the club, and that's it. This little girl hops up on stage, and the whole world is talking about her twerking. And she really ain't working her twerk, you know? So,
I mean, her performance was called a minstrel show by several writers and bloggers. Like, it was just...
It was her way to, like, keep herself relevant.
Yeah. I think what troubles me about the performance is the fact that Miley can get into the ratchet mode, I guess, don the ratchet costume, do the so-called ratchet dance.
She really is ratchet, too.
And make whatever little money and get whatever... Yeah, and get whatever little attention she wants to. And the moment she wakes up and decides, I want to be Billy Ray Cyrus's daughter again, she can grow her hair out and go right back to that life. She's already a millionaire. You know what I mean? As where the culture that she's borrowing, the people who she's mimicking don't have that luxury, you know? And to me, a lot of our stereotypes, they're based on real life people and their experiences that are steeped in pain and poverty. And it's not cool to me to be able to jump in and borrow it when you want to and jump out when you want to, because we don't have that luxury, you know? And that particular group of us really doesn't have that luxury, nor do they have the balance. Sean and I were talking about this off mic before. They don't have the balance to see that, you know, there is something outside of just this moment right here.
Right.
As where Miley does. She has access to a whole world that none of us at this table have, just based off the kind of money that she makes, whether she's twerking or singing in a ball gown.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and I don't think she's aware of that, of the impact that it will have on the group that she's borrowing from. I don't think she has to care.
Right.
It doesn't have a long-term effect on her. You know what I mean? If she comes out in 3 years, new look, good album, good single, nobody will be talking about Miley twerking anymore. To be like, oh my God, look at the new Miley. And she dropped this ballad, and it'll be a done deal.
Right. And then when you look at it from an artistic standpoint, right? Twerking ain't all that bad. You know, like, if you're a dancer and you dance and you know the history of dance and you look at dance like Caribbean dance and African dance, moving every body part was just a part of what we do.
Right.
But unfortunately, like, it loses its value. It loses its artistic value, shall I say, when you do have a Miley Cyrus on stage, or when people are writing, because now it's associated with something negative, right? Mm-hmm. Dancing on stage and popping your butt doesn't necessarily have to be negative. It does not have to be negative. When you think about, again, when you look at dance and you look at African dance, they're moving all body parts. When you think about Caribbean dance, right? When you think about calypso and all that kind of stuff, the body parts, it could be perceived, but something, when you see it in a culture, it's cultural, right? Right. But then when you associate it with Miley Cyrus,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, no,
or
absolutely.
The video girl, for some reason we can't see its artistic value, but you put it on a stage, and then it has a total different meaning.
Well, yeah, and you know, make it clear, I'm not at all against sexuality in dance or music, even, right. You know, I mean, everything has to have its context. Just because something is sexual and even sort of erotic or provocative doesn't mean it has to be gratuitous or
right.
grimy,
mm-hmm. right, 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 mm-hmm.
or ratchet, which is the word, which is the word of today. and so, you know, there, what exactly was the message behind what Miley was doing? Is that it's my party? I can do what I want,
and I need to be relevant.
I think more than anything, these Disney stars. Hey, what's going on? These Disney stars, they come from, you know, they come from that universe that I guess must be a fairly repressive Disney universe. And it seems like once they get out of that, they just want to run as far and as fast in the other direction as
they
possibly can.
Hence Britney Spears. She was a little mouseketeer. Yeah, Justin Timberlake, a little mouseketeer. Christina Aguilera, little mouseketeer. What does Disney do to these folks?
Exactly. And so it's naked cultural rebellion in that sense. But there's nothing else to it. There's no celebration of the beauty of the human body, or there's no sort of, you know, enchantment of seduction or anything like that. I mean, you know, she should have chose a different choice of wardrobe anyway. But, you know, there's nothing to it other than the fact it's just pure exploitation of, you know, a subset of our culture, essentially, that is problematic within our sphere. And that's just a shame that it just leads to the broader defining of who we are by Miley Cyrus's adoption of something that, you know, is limited in scope in terms of its existence in our community. And so I'm disappointed in Miley.
And historically, that's been the case. The Black experience being shared or narrated through the eyes of the other, so to speak. Mm-hmm. That's something that's been happening forever.
And this point might have been added. This is Tash. But everyone that you mentioned of the Disney kids, like, you know, when they go mainstream, essentially what they're doing is mining Black culture. And it's like, and I think it is a cause, her performance is cause to actually address the fact that, you know, it might not be the same as Tin Pan Alley, where you bring in, you know, a church or a blues singer and have them compose something, and then you publish it and you consider it your original composition, but it was just a poor Black man who has the gift of, you know, of playing the piano and singing. But it's still exploitation, and it deserves a ripe conversation, like making an affront, bringing the exploitation to the masses in a, whether it's Justin Timberlake, and I don't care if you like his latest album, or Britney Spears, or whomever it is. I mean, all of this would be okay if the racial conversation that we were having as Americans between Black and white and Latinos was one that was, or whomever, was one that was historically honest, and be like, oh yeah, you know, rock and roll and blues and all these things. Oh yeah, I guess this, you know, as if we were sourcing and citing exactly where these things come from, and then like not it being a big deal. Like, yeah, no, that's exactly where it comes from. But it seems as if things in white America tend to exist tend to exist and come of age, like the advent of rock and roll just happened with, you know, Elvis Presley. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lot of that's what strikes a chord, and that's what why the racial aspect of the conversation comes up, because there isn't a proper
acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's it. Yeah,
because the way it's almost a revisionist history, as if it wasn't created by the group of people who did create it, but once somebody else appropriates it and makes it successful, now it becomes theirs.
Where the history isn't a part of the actual history isn't a part of our narrative. Yeah, exactly. Of the music or whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah.
And Woods, now I want to ask you this question, because this is the conversation we started having on Facebook and we paused it to save it for the mic. You made the point that you felt our responsibility as the Black community is to really be clear that we do not embrace these particular stereotypes. And if we as a group say out loud and proud, we're not about twerking, we're not about the ratchet, that these types of stereotypes will go away. We as a people can elevate, and the sort of imagery that is put out about us will change. It'll be more positive as long as we stop feeling like it's okay. And do you still feel that
way? Well, let me be clear. It would not go away.
Okay.
If I made it seem like it would go away, no, it's not going to go away. I think it would be minimized.
Okay.
You know? But you're never going to be able to change the way people think or police the way people think outside of, you know, your own sphere. You're not going to be able to police the way people think within your own culture. Mm-hmm. You know. But I do think that there could be substantially more cultural unity within the Black community, and I think that that would do a lot to make it more difficult for us to be defined outside of that in ways that are contradictory to our aspirations. You know, so you know you're not gonna get rid of that by any means, but you could do something, I think, to tamper it down significantly. And even if you couldn't get rid of it, it's still worth it to do that just for our own self-conception, mm-hmm. self-perception.
And even in not getting rid of it, that's what happens. The other will find itself confronting it. So whatever the opposite is, you can't get rid of it. But whatever the opposite thought, the opposite movement, will confront it at some time. Mm-hmm. And just like you can't get rid of, artists mining Black culture for popular, but at some point you're going to get confronted with, oh, you're faking, or you're trying to be down, or whatever mm-hmm. it is. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, there's even Black folks who get confronted with that because it doesn't seem like it's authentic for them.
Yeah, because for me, my thing is, as long as it makes money, it's not going anywhere. The moment it stops making money and it becomes too faddish and people lose interest in it, then the next thing will come along that will be borrowed and appropriated and all that kind of stuff. But as long as it makes money, it will exist, because we've always had those characters in our history as far as entertainment is concerned.
I love a... This is Sean. I'm of a different school of thought on the topic. I'm of the school of thought based around, you teach people how to treat you. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of things that have been happening in the African-American community, more contemporary today, is because we're just letting all things go out against us. And we have no strong leadership. We have nobody saying enough is enough. As if we have to just sit and take this and talk silently amongst ourselves about these disrespectful things that are happening in our community. And again, not to go back to the Black church, but I'm like, that's where that responsibility used to lie, that we had Black leaders in the Black churches who said this is unacceptable behavior, not just within our communities, but outside our communities. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, it's just things are just going to be a certain way. I go back to it. I hate using this word because it's not a word. I like to say what it is, the word nigga. There are white people in this country today still won't use that word, because they know it's unacceptable in our community for anybody outside the community to just feel comfortable to say it. If they've learned that lesson, they can learn a lot of other lessons. It's just, what are we going to stand for and say, we've had enough. You will not be depicting our community and portraying us this way. And I don't think you have to have rallies, and I don't think you have to have marches. I think we have enough educated, influential Blacks to go in these boardrooms, because those decisions that Molly's doing, somebody behind the scenes is allowing it. And we have enough educated people to say, you know what, we need to sit down and have a meeting. That, what you're doing and what you're allowing your people to do, you're not doing that anymore.
I mean, that's what the NAACP, Urban League, I mean, those are our anti-defamation leagues, or, you know, those are our, the organizations which are supposed to. And I'm pretty sure there was a press release from both the NAACP and the, I'm assuming.
Which we now have to question just how affected they are in representing our interests. If if you're putting out a letter and you're doing it that way and people are still exploiting our people, I'm sorry, but I'm one about, we need to shut you down because you're not relevant to being in a position to protect our people.
Well, I just think maybe we've passed a threshold where our kindness and like the open arms of bringing people into the culture, it's like, can we dial back? Like you said, you have to teach people how to treat you. Well, we have taught a lesson, and it's a lesson that people are hearing loud and clear that, yeah, that, you know, if your particular black friend gives you permission, you can use that word.
If you're down.
Or if you're, yeah, or, you know, if your community, if you grew up around us, we're like, yeah, that's our white boy, or that's him. Like, no, he's cool, like, no matter what. And so maybe, like, the old guard of how people thought about it, like, in the 50s, it's just, it's a changing time. And I definitely think there should be some lines drawn, but, you know, it could be that people are hearing our lessons loud and clear.
What I'm saying is that we have to define our culture, and we have to, because right now I'm constantly hearing people say times are changing and whatnot. You never hear that attack on the Jewish community about things that they're doing in this country. Things that they were doing 50 years ago, they're still respected today. I'm like, if it's changing that much, why isn't everybody being impacted by this huge change that we say taking place? I don't think everybody's being impacted. I think people who are allowing it are being impacted. Hmm.
I wonder if it's specific to minority groups. Because what I started thinking about as both of you were talking was my niece who just started college. She's a freshman this year. And a conversation she and I had about race, because she posted something on Facebook about how race for her is something that doesn't really exist. People are people. And I said, well, niece, the older you get, first of all, I commend you for being open and wanting to see people for who they are beyond race and ethnicity. I said, but the older you are and the more life you live, you will understand race does matter. It has an impact. It has an effect. Otherwise, we would not need to have a word race. We would not need to have these conversations on race. So it's not that it doesn't exist. I said, you just have been fortunate enough at this point in your life to not recognize when something has impacted you based on race. But just live a little bit longer, you know, and you will have an experience that brings it definitely home for you. And I think that generation is, they're very much trying to blur lines. Funny that would come up right now. Exactly. But trying to blur lines when it comes to issues of race and ethnicity as if there are no issues beyond it. And I think a lot of them believe if they just act and accept that there are no issues, there won't be any.
Well, you know, and that's kind of another subject almost in and of itself. funny that you mentioned it, though, because that is true. And it's actually, to a certain extent, to the credit of, you know, the younger generation, that I think they do see things less and less in explicitly racial terms. And, you know, there's a sense in which that is a good thing, because at the end of the day, you know, our value as human beings is not determined by whether we're black or white or anything else. It's just a matter of the content of your character. I mean, that obviously was the core of the creed of our civil rights struggle. At the same time, it's not a good thing to be ignorant of history and of the circumstances so often tied to the racial origins of our history and experience that have led us to whatever particular place. Just one side note, though. I don't have any problem with the appropriation from one race or culture of the music or culture of another. I do agree with Tash that it's important to know where things came from. But, you know, as long as things are, you know, of cultural or musical quality, you know, and obviously there's subjectivity, but as long as things are of quality, it's good to have, I think, an interaction of cultural forces. It's just, and this is across the lines, white culture, black culture, American culture. I mean, things just seem to be crass and gratuitous and materialistic nowadays. And it seems like, you know, we just celebrate that almost unreservedly, you know. And, you know, the Miley thing is just kind of a gross manifestation of that. But it's just all over the place. And to a certain extent, it's something that all races should probably be uniting against in whatever form or manifestation. Because I'm concerned about, you know, where the country goes if this is the cultural direction it's following.
That's funny. This is Chris. I'm coming into this late, but since y'all talking about Miley Cyrus, I thought when I first saw it and I was watching it and I see Robin Thicke come on, I was like, first off, was like, oh, MTV playing this so perfectly. I'm like, why? First of all, like, why is she on the show to begin with? I'm like, is the single that popping? Is it, oh, because she's trending. You know, basically Jay-Z gave her the black approval. Like, hey, I'm going to just mention in your rap. Saying, go ahead and keep twerking, Miley Cyrus. So the black people okayed her. And then I was like, all right. And then you got Robin Thicke, who's this one song has been controversial because
Marvin Gaye.
Yeah, because of the Marvin Gaye, but more so because he's basically like, in the lyrics, is like, you an animal and it's in your nature. So, and all that drama. And I'm like, why is she on here dancing with him? I'm like, this is completely set. I was like, if anybody thinks this was just, it just happened. I'm like, no, MTV, Viacom, Clear Channel, all that, they planned this perfectly to put this out this way, which she looks stupid. And,
exactly.
You know, it happened with Britney Spears when she was over there overweight with her gut sticking out. You know, eventually, she's going to say, it was my fault. I was doing the wrong thing and I'm back.
That's funny that you should mention when you first saw it, you questioned why she was even there. When I first saw it, I said to myself, does she know what she's doing? Like, is she acutely aware of what she's doing? Because if she does, she's a genius. This is like subversive racism at its best. And I respect her for bringing the conversation, this is high art. And then at some point I realized, oh, wait, no, she has no clue about the subtext of what she's of. There was no subtext to her performance. She was like God honest. She was God earnest, like performing. And I was like, oh, this is so disappointing. It's just raunchy and crass at this point. But,
so you would have had more respect for her if it had been a consciously sophisticated racist ploy.
Absolutely. If it had been a subversive, consciously racist, sophisticated, if there had been a real statement being made.
As opposed to the
and
accidental
we were clear
racism.
That's where
Miley's
her mindset own. Was, too.
Yeah, and, you know,
no, I think she
thought
it was cool.
I would like to see this.
No, she's not.
10 years from now, I'd like to see how she feels. They say jurors, after they, come up with a verdict, they rationalize it and they stay, connected to their verdict no matter what. I wonder if 10 years from now, holla at me, Miley Cyrus. I want to know how she feels. No, I don't.
Yeah, I'm like, she's basically in this. She's going through that period where she don't want to be Hannah Montana no more, and I want to be make adult shit. So how do I get through that? That in between?
Hasn't her show been over for like five? I mean, I feel like her show's been over for 10 years.
It's the same
actually.
Thing with like if you're a kid star in your field, if you're a kid actor, how do you become an adult actor without people still latching on to you? I remember you when you were a kid. You
she needs to holler at Raven Simone.
For real. See, my question was why?
But look, Drew Barrymore went through some crap. And then, like, oh,
but she's a Barrymore, though. No, she is a Barrymore. They're like the first American family, damn near.
That's
like
how people complain with black folk. I was like, what black person can go through that? Like, oh, I'm accused of, I'm on that white, or I'm acting mad ignorant, or I go on a popular award show and bomb.
Well, that's never the case, because when it comes to entertainment, babe, we always are the ones that set the standard.
Right, but I mean, like,
so we're never borrowing usually.
No, but I mean,
well, take that back. Right now, Usher is so Europop, I can't even really listen to his music.
What recent entertainer, black entertainer, can fail like that and still come back 5 years later and just reclaim their spot?
Let me think. Let me think. There's an answer to this question.
Maxwell. Like,
Bobby Brown. Maxwell's never bombed.
Somebody who was really good up to a point, I guess, was still with younger audiences, and then just basically either has a performance that's just like, what is your problem, or just gets off on some drugs. Like, what black actor has done a Robert Downey Jr.? Like you said with Drew Barrymore, where she's a kid, basically hit bottom and then come back up. And
we
I'm
don't
a star.
Usually have that particular luxury to be able to do to bomb and then come back. Society is 10 times harder on us.
Whitney was never able to come back.
Whitney was never able to come back. Her and Bobby Brown together, sure enough,
weren't coming
couldn't
back.
Come back.
They didn't even come back.
Right.
Together.
My question was, though, why was that particular subset of black culture of interest to Miley? Like, of all stereotypes to appropriate, why that one?
I think because...
Why not do a Beyonce? Like...
Because it's too clean.
That's too...
It's too similar to what she already was.
No, and it's too much talent. It's too talented. Right.
She can't
emulate
Beyonce.
That. She cannot emulate that. She can't sing like that. There's no sex appeal to her. I mean...
I can't even think of anybody who she actually could come back as.
Or
try to be like. Because this clearly did not work.
Right. This was just video girl... dancing. It was, and don't get me wrong, because like I said, I don't see anything wrong with twerking, you know, and the audience can't see me with my quotes, right, whatever it means, right, because I dance, right, but when you look at her, it doesn't take much to get up there and claim it, right? Now, we're all looking back like, this heifer ain't twerk, she ain't got nothing to twerk,
right?
But pop culture embraced it. You know, it's like twerking, and she's flying with it. Like she's making it cool. Like I said, if you see the video, she's got gold teeth. She's got her grill in. She's got her beanie on to the side. She's like doing the extra out, like her and her girls are swagged up, yet throwing her hands up. Because it doesn't take talent to do that.
And see, there was a million videos that came out after she did this. People trying to play twerk. Of course, again, the girl who set herself on fire. But the one video that stood out to me. Yeah, she needs to just sit down. The video that bugged me. Somebody, and I don't know why people do this, videotaped their little like 5 or 6 year old baby girl twerking in some little bedazzled jean shorts, dropping it. And I'm like... That's so inappropriate. You know what I'm saying? It's a part of our culture. It's a part of our dance culture. Like you said, we look at African dance. So much of all the booty shaking and stuff is a part of it. Yeah. But when we got the babies out there doing, I mean.
It's even like you can think about like.
I don't know.
You got, you got the belly dancers and then you got the, you know, the Hawaiians do their thing.
Right.
You know, at some point, you know, for our culture, if you do it too early. You're like, who the hell done taught you to do that?
But then it's different because if you're going to teach them that, you got to teach them the whole culture.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, case in point.
That dance.
Right. You guys, my goddaughter, right? She's going to do all of it. But that's because she loves every bit of dance. She lives and breathes. So if I caught her, like, winding, we'd be like, is she winding? But at the same time, I know she's going to bust into a jazz move next. Mm-hmm. Or she's going to bust into a tap move next. Or to an African dance move next. And she appreciates the culture of dance. I think that's where we fall short. We're not telling them this is something beautiful and this is something to embrace. We're more promoting it as something, this is a get you attention. This is sexy. So it loses its value. And so our little girls are valuing on twerking as a way to get an applause from people.
Right.
Attention. As opposed to something that I'm building some type of skill in myself. Like, after I twerk, I'm going to throw on some point shoes.
Right.
No, it's like I'm in my pumps and I'm twerking and I'm doing it and I'm going to get raunchier with it and I'm going to let it go wherever it needs to go as long as I get attention for it.
Yeah.
And that's not what it's about.
Yeah.
I don't know when it happened. I don't know if it was around. Because it's been around forever.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it was. I remember when they had, like, a year ago when they had that little, basically that Mountain Dew type drink where they had people, it was like the little popping.
Oh, they would take a drink and then start popping.
I don't know when it hit pop culture. Well, basically when white folks said, oh, it's cool now, we can do this. It's just, I'm like, I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, everybody has pretty much said what can be said about poor little Miley Cyrus, but what the brother Sean said is actually kind of resonating in my head. Like, is this a time that we need to, like, seriously take a stand for the things that we don't want to see happen? And how do we go about
that? Train people how to teach us. I mean, teach people how to treat us. Yes.
So many of us want to be treated differently, though. I feel as if this is the time to start a black school where you send your kids to black school on Saturday. Like,
I've been saying that. Yes. Just like there's, like, Japanese school after school, or like you said, Jewish school. Like, we need to have some sort of academic center that teaches our kids self-esteem, history, all of the cultural artifacts, not just a piece of it,
right?
But like really builds them up to have pride in who they are and where they come from and what we of a group has created, so that they covet it and protect it.
And they protect it and they embrace it and they appreciate it.
I'm so down for that.
You gotta start it soon.
I know.
Ain't no time like the present.
Like now.
Right.
Well, I guess on that note, we're putting that out there for all the philanthropists, black philanthropists. Holla at us. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to tune in to the next Black is Break.
If you like what you're hearing so far, make sure you like us on Facebook at Black Is Magazine, and follow us on Twitter at Black Is Online. Now, back to the show.
Layman, we have an OG roundtable group in the house tonight. Tonight's guests are Chris Layman, Toria Williams, Tash Mosley, Mr. CEO, and Malcolm Darrell. And tonight's topic is the butler. We discussed it a little bit with Culture Connection with Brother Malcolm last week, or was that the week before? But we're bringing the movie back to the table with the larger group. I think I just have one point I want to make about this film and really about all these other historical pieces that are coming up. There's been a lot of conversation and critique about why are there so many films depicting black people in subservient positions, all these slave movies, all these maid movies, all these helping movies where we're in that position. And I just need all of us as black people to acknowledge that this is our history. Yes, we do want to tell all these stories of all of us doing great and we all rich and we all balling and it's the best man times 30,000. But if we're being really real about our history in this country, this is who we are. And the fact that there aren't many conversations happening amongst our youth about slavery, about our history, about civil rights, I think that this is important that these films are being made, because it's making this a conversation now. These kids now will look back at movies like 12 Years a Slave once it comes out, The Butler, The Help, questionably, because it's coming from the eyes of the other. But they'll look at these stories and know this is a part of our experience. And The Butler specifically, because I do feel this is the first time I've seen black history, the civil rights era, dramatized. I don't think I've ever seen it this way, where there was actually recreations of sit-ins and protest at this level. I thought it was beautifully done. People can say what they want about Lee Daniels. I think he did a good job with this film. I think the cast was impeccable. I enjoyed the film from start to finish, and I hope everybody, not just black people, but everybody takes in this piece of cinematic American history.
Yeah, I mean, I have been encouraging everyone to go see it. I don't particularly think it's a good movie. I think it's worth seeing. I started off, before I saw it, I heard Danny Strong, the writer, talk about the inspiration. And he said, you know, I thought there really deserved to be a story about the civil rights era in the United States. You know, there's so many, these are his words, paraphrasing. There are so many movies about World War II and the Holocaust. And in his mind, that the civil rights era was the biggest movement or the biggest historical moment in 20th century America. And when he found out, when he read the review of the book that was in that was done on the butler, the guy, and the review was in the New York Times, and he read a review of it, he thought, oh my God, I have my vehicle. I have someone who is working and sitting next to the seat of power who is making policy decisions about him, about his life and community, while when he goes home, his life is living out the result of the policy decisions that these presidents are implementing. And he was like, it was just the perfect way to tell a sprawling narrative about the civil rights movement. And in doing so, I applaud the effort. From a, just a basic story standpoint, I think it misses the mark. And I think essentially it misses the mark for me because the central story about a father and son who see each other's path and their work as being the enemy isn't really fleshed out and isn't really clear until it's actually literally articulated, like, oh, I didn't know that my son wasn't the enemy, like 5 minutes before the movie's over. And for me, that entire relationship just kind of was a letdown. That said, I also didn't like how they dealt with the Black Power movement and the Black Panther movement.
Yeah.
I just felt it was like, there was not any respect for it or in any...
They demonized the Black Panthers.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
We discussed that. Yeah. They demonized the Black Panthers entirely.
Yeah, but for me, it's definitely worth seeing. And I've said this, I think Oprah's incredible.
I'm going to chop and screw it up. I think Oprah's incredible.
So I'm going to change it now. Can I go?
Yeah. We already got it.
I think Oprah's performance in this movie is incredible. No, seriously, I think she going in, she had the hardest task. Like, you know, she has such a big persona as Oprah that you were going into as kind of a spectacle to be like, oh, let me go see if Oprah messes up or Oprah. Let me go see what Oprah does
in
about 30 seconds into her just sitting at the kitchen table. You're like, oh, okay, she's good. Let me get into the story. And you're gone. You're in her character completely. Mm-hmm. And just to watch that type of performance, and she's sexy. Mm-hmm. I think it's worth, I know, yeah, Oprah is sexy in this movie. I think it's worth watching.
Sample.
And see, I just want to address real quick before we move on Tash's point about the father-son relationship, which we all talked about a little bit. I felt like there were a lot of layers to consider in regards to that relationship, starting with the fact of how we meet. I now forget the butler's name in the movie, but his characters. Thank you, Cecil Gaines. How he loses his father and his mother, and how he's without structure, and how that lends itself to the sort of parent he becomes, the choices that he makes because he sees his father stand up for himself, and how he chooses to, it's so funny, it ties into the conversation we just had, he chooses to play the game and mm-hmm. follow the rules. Yeah. And for him to have a child that is choosing to do the exact opposite, for him, a Black man that stands up for himself will lose his life. And his son is already putting himself in position where his life is in danger. And so I think it's just to me, it was so many various layers there and things to consider in regards to being a parent without a child, or excuse me, a child without a parent, losing a parent in a violent manner, and then trying to yourself be a parent without ever having an example there. How do you work out those spaces of like, how do you explain this to your son? When you really haven't had an opportunity to reckon with that pain or that trauma.
I never felt the tension between those two actors, the Forest Whitaker and I want to know this brother's last name perfectly, David Oyelowo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I never felt the that there was a ripe tension between them. And it didn't feel like like when a father and a son kind of hate each other, even when they love each other. I never got that.
I don't know if it was hate.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when you think back, though.
Or hate each other's work. Or hate each other.
I don't even think it was hate. It didn't respect. But if you, I was thinking about Kim's statement. When we go back to young Cecil, he kind of had that little militant in him because remember, he's the one who asked his dad, what are you going to do? And his dad kind of, you got this impression like his dad was like, just keep going. Because his dad told him, don't say anything, because he was going to approach the guy in the beginning. Like, what are you doing with my mom? Mm-hmm. And his father hushed him. And then when he heard all the screaming, he asked his father, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like he had this anger in him. He at one point as a child had that like, in him,
that fight
in him, but then to see your father shot down, it kind of like let me conform, you know. Mm-hmm. Going to your point about the tension and the hate, I never felt like they hated each other. I just felt like it was very clear that his son didn't respect what his dad did early on when Terrence Howard's character was talking about saying, "Yeah, my son wants to be like you, see, so when he gets older and blah 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 blah," and he asked the kid, like, don't you want to be like your dad? And he just kind of had this look like, no. Mm-hmm. And everybody was like, he's made it to the White House. And the son just didn't have a respect for his dad. It wasn't that he didn't hate him. He didn't respect his father.
Yeah, no, I get that. And listen, it was all there. It was all kind of painted. I just never really believed it. And the tension, the stakes were never high enough for me to like...
But it kind of spoke to the father's character, though. He wasn't going to be this, like, very vocal and verbal about...
Actually, the tension can be there without... Yeah, well, you can emote it. Start,
like, no, but it went with his character of being like, yeah, it's like almost a blind eye to it. He knew his son didn't respect him, but was like, eh.
I mean, he didn't sound like with his relationship with his wife that he's always gone and he's like, I'm not going to say nothing. Like, the part that bothered me was when his son was going to Fisk. And he's so like, when I left the South, I was never going back there. So the fact that his son is going to a school in the South, he's not liking it. You know, there's a possibility that this might be the last chance you might see your son. And you're like, do I hug my son? I'm like, what the fuck? Hug your damn son.
Yeah, we were both in the theater at that moment when the son is getting ready to get on the bus. Like, can you hug your child? Please hug your child. Don't let him leave and you don't hug your child.
But that speaks to a lot of men. Like, you know, a lot of fathers that... it's hard to show affection. My job is to provide for you.
Right, and set an example.
Right, and set an example.
We should just be careful, though, because one of the things that I think is dangerous about a movie that is inspired by versus based on is that a lot of things that we saw were Lee Daniels' decisions to make. Right. You know what I mean? So we don't know if he really did hug his son, or, you know, these are a lot of things that were as the artistic lead of the picture. He decides what he wants it to look like, what tension he wants to create, does not want to create, what. Right. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Right. I mean, the only thing
we're
think
talking about whether his depiction works for the narrative.
But I think a lot of people, when I talk to black people, they talk about this movie like this is our history. And, you know, so it's a very fine line. Yeah. It's a very fine line because I think people talk about it as if it's a docu-pic as opposed to...
But there's some fact to that. Maybe that particular... We don't know exactly in that particular moment these characters' reality, if they, you know, if they hugged or didn't hug. But there is fact to that because, like we stated... Black fathers were incapable, generally speaking, of showing affection like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it was difficult for them
especially
maybe at that time.
That time.
And even nowadays.
Yeah, even nowadays,
know?
Right.
So, you know, that was a real depiction of what it is that men and fathers, son and fathers, go through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's what I took away with, like, you know, this really speaks to the father-son relationship.
Right. And I heard an interview that he did on KCRW. With Lee Daniels and the fact that he likes to put a lot of his personal
experiences
in the movie. So when he was talking about his relationship with his father and all the crap he went through, I was like, oh,
right,
okay, well, that makes sense why the father and the son tension is so like, dang, like, you guys really do not get along. Like, you guys are like, all right, do you love your father? Yeah. You love your son? Yeah. But I mean,
loving each other, but not liking each other.
And that happens too a lot when you think of like parents that chase careers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
They've forgotten. Like, I was angry with him because it was like, God, you've just forgotten how to be the family man, like allowing yourself to feel your family. But you did get a little emotional when it came to the work you were doing. So for somehow it was easier for you to connect to the little girl. Caroline, was it Caroline?
Yeah, Caroline Kennedy.
Yeah, you could connect to her and you could connect to your work. Like it validated you as a man, yet connecting to the family didn't necessarily validate you, mm-hmm. you know?
And I want to just say quickly, this whole film is inspired by a man named Eugene Allen, who was a butler at the White House for about 35 years over several presidents. And the this actual film is inspired by an article called A Butler Well Served by This Election that came out in the Washington Post, I think around 08. And the writer was speaking about the fact that here is this black man who has seen several presidents and all of this history transpire while he's in this particular position, seeing different things and laws happen that would have an impact on his life and just what that experience might be, you know, to be somebody who's at the back door, so to speak, of all of this that's happening, you know, listening to the conversations and seeing the meetings take right. place, you know, and being so very close to it, but really being a voiceless, nameless person that nobody knows actually existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I pretty much thought the movie like just a black man that was in all who had this position for 20 years. Once you got past that, I thought everything else was fiction. I was mm-hmm. like, right. all right, this is. This job, somebody did do this job for this many years. But after that, I was like, this is probably all made up anyway. But I do like the history. I like that they showed the sit-ins and how you actually had to train these people go through this crap. Yes. And I'm like, I mean, getting coffee thrown on your face.
Spit.
Getting spit on. All of that, you know. Mm-hmm. And you knowing at some point the cops going to come. Like, this white folk going to just beat you up until they like, all right, I'm tired. Let's just call the cops. Let them haul their ass off.
Had to be a pretty special movie. Mariah took her makeup off.
Her, you know what's funny? Her scene, I was actually like, this could actually be real.
What was
it?
It
was like she was the only light skinned person. But I mean, she was light.
Right.
But you were like,
it's like, how were, is she in the
right,
field?
You were clearly
right now.
Like, all right, well, clearly you
right,
were.
Why was
you
she
was,
in the field?
Your mama was raped.
A slave master situation. I think aside from that, I think it's a film that everybody should see because, again, it just dramatizes the civil rights movement in a way that I've never seen done before, you know. And, of course, they have their clips from actual historic, you know, footage. But I've never seen it dramatized. And I think Lee Daniels did a decent job. I think it's a good film. I think it's an entertaining film. I think the acting was great. Shout out to Terrence Howard. He had to put his hand on Oprah at some point, boy. He tried to be as slick about it as possible, but Terrence, I did see that. But overall, I thought it was an enjoyable and entertaining film. I think it's an important film. I hope a lot of our young people see it. Because even though it is a fiction piece, it is based on history, and there's a lot of historical events that actually did take place. The actual events that pertain to this country and the various presidents and what they went through, that stuff was real. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're seeing it through the eyes. We're not really seeing it through the eyes of this character. His life just happens to be a part of what's going on. But it's a good film.
No, it was
I
good.
Think you should see it.
It was good that the fact that the story wasn't all about him.
Right.
I was like, oh, God, really? But yeah. I mean, him walking out and after King's dead, he just, you know.
Oh, yeah. Can we please talk about Nelson Ellis's portrayal of Martin Luther King? I enjoyed him very much in that role, and I love the scene. First of all, I love him anyway, but I loved his breakdown, and I'm piggybacking off of a conversation we had earlier, but his breakdown on the role of the black domestic.
Yeah.
You know,
and how it's
something that we need to not be ashamed of in regards to our history. You know what I mean?
People I almost forgot about that.
People who played those roles were not being submissive, but they actually turned stereotypes on their head by being hardworking, by being loyal, by gaining trust, and they were more subversive than submissive.
And also just, you know, to what you're saying about making sure the young people see this, you know, it's one thing for the young people to see this, but I think, you know, yeah, exactly. Someone needs to be there to maybe explain to them what it is that they are seeing and put some facts behind that to bring it all full circle, you know, not just go see it Because then you're just going to go see him like, oh, that was a good movie. You just going to you to that young person, it may just be all fiction. It's just a story that someone said.
To
you know,
be
and somebody to say, like, this is how it really happened and break it down.
Because even in the beginning, a young person might look at that and think, oh, this is slavery. But what we're actually looking at is a time period for sharecropping. So having a child understand the difference, even though, you know.
To your point on Nelson Ellis, I'd like to be a professional hater. And comment that what you liked about what you described, what you liked was actually the writing, and the getting that moment in, and it's like saying, oh, I love that Marissa Tomei monologue when she says this. It's sometimes really good writing, like no matter what, if the actor is just good, you know, it's gonna pop that moment, and getting that historical fact in is nice.
No, look, I like the writing.
Clarifying my thoughts for me, I appreciate that.
No, I mean, you said you really loved when he said, and I just wanted like that.
I love Nelson Ellis. Right, he could have said, "I'm Rick James, bitch," and I would have enjoyed it.
You were expressing your love for that point.
Oh my gosh,
for him
the way he
point
said
"boo
boo"
of what that is, you know. It's just like, that point about the role of the domestic was the point that the writer made.
It was a good
Nelson.
Point that the writer made. Yeah. Agreed.
No, I was going to say, but I mean, like, Nelson. Even... even
because
get...
Kim was confused. She really thought that was Nelson expressing himself.
No, I mean, I can't give his performance credit when it's the writing that I love there. Or that
so what'd you think of the white actors?
Yeah, I'm
what'd
not
going to
what'd
you think of the white actors? What'd you think of the white actors?
I like some of them.
Go ahead and say they was awesome.
I like some of them. Some of the presidents I liked, you know, some of them. I didn't really respond to James Marsden as JFK. I actually liked Alan Rickman's Reagan because it was kind of unexpected.
I totally didn't expect it to be
I actually like Nelson Ellis. I like Nelson Ellis. I just think the strength of the point he made was just like a point where I was like,
well, yeah,
ooh,
he only had like
good writing.
That was like his scene.
Yeah, exactly.
That was his only talking point. But I mean, yeah, Oprah's part where she was like, I was like, wow, Oprah, this is a for real, like, black woman, this how they talk.
Yeah.
She was old.
I was like, what? I could kick it with Oprah.
My grandbaby, this is, she ugly. Like, Oprah, she looked like you. Oh.
She a pretty little thing.
Yes. Like, I'd kick it with Oprah because Oprah ain't acting, y'all. That's Oprah behind closed doors.
No. Yeah. I like that they showed their relationship, that they were, you know, in everything. I mean.
Stood by her man and loved her kids.
Even though she cheated, you know, and if it was the other way around, we would have had.
I don't know if.
I think she slept with him.
Okay. You know, I didn't think she did.
I
think
around,
she thought about it. Like she might have flirted
with
him.
With that bitch.
She might have done something.
She flirted. I think she might have flirted and, you know, accepted his advances, but was like, nigga, please. Because
she
was take your ass home.
I think he tapped it.
She's like, I need to be with my husband.
You take your ass home.
I think she did it one time. I think it wasn't like a film, but I think she might have been like.
One time hit.
Give him a little taste.
Because he was funny as hell. Him and his wife. He and his wife.
The little tap he did on her chest. Just had me dying though. I see you feeling on Oprah.
Yeah,
Terrence.
Yeah,
I ain't mad at that at all.
Yeah, that's Terrence. He ain't playing.
It was like $1 billion titty you just touched.
How many people can say?
Who passed that up?
How many can say they tapped $1 billion tit? Oprah's only one with $1 billion tits,
right?
Oh, but Clarence Williams was good in it too.
Yeah.
With his point about wearing the mask.
Yeah, he was good too. Well, all of that to say, people, check out The Butler and check out all of these other black films that are coming out. I had a list somewhere. I know 12 Years a Slave is coming out. There was another film, Things Never Said, that we saw the preview to. The Tale of...
Oh, yeah, there were a lot of black movies.
So did they just show y'all a whole bunch of black previews?
Baggage
Claim.
Yeah, Baggage Claim. There's only one black preview I'm not going to mention because I didn't care for it. But definitely go see, because we're going to do a Black Is
How come I
field
can't get these
black
that. Previews when I went to see Superman?
Right. The Best Man Holiday.
Oh, yeah.
Looking forward to that.
Oh, I can't wait to see that.
Looking very, very forward to that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh,
yes,
I can't wait.
So stay tuned in, folks. We love y'all. Peace. Peace.